Hey everybody, it's Michelle Fisher and welcome into A View From My Window. As always, I thank you for joining us today. Today we are pleased to be talking with candidate for Lieutenant Governor Christina Hale. Born and raised in Michigan City, Christina was a single mom who earned her bachelor's degree from Purdue University while working full-time and raising her son. Christina served in various roles at the Indiana Department of Commerce and the Indiana Professional Standards Board before being named a special assistant to Governor O'Bannon, overseeing the state's boards and commissions. In 2004, Christina joined Kiwanis International as Chief Communications Officer, where she spearheaded communications worldwide, and in 2012, Christina was elected to the Indiana House of Representatives, representing the north side of Indianapolis. Today, she is running for Lieutenant Governor along with candidate for Governor John Gregg, and of course, I am very happy to welcome Christina Hale and also Executive Director of the Arc of Indiana, Kim Dotson. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
It's so great to have you. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start the questions, okay? How did you make the decision to run for Lieutenant Governor?
Well, I was serving as a state representative in the Indiana General Assembly and really was just looking around the state at all of the outstanding issues that weren't being addressed. And I'm a very solution-oriented person, and I am a mission-driven person, and I just wanted to get to work on good things for people. And John Gregg asked me to serve by his side as his partner, and I thought this is a great opportunity, especially to elevate the public conversation about issues that impact every Hoosier's life. And I just thought, what a great opportunity to hit the ground running and to engage about the important things before us.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about those outstanding issues. One of those things is people with developmental disabilities want to be active and provide, be provided opportunities to receive an education, have a job, live a full life. So how do you plan on using your office to support those issues?
Well, as you mentioned in the intro, I worked for a number of years for Kiwanis International, which is the organization that sponsors action clubs around the world. And that was one of the best parts of my job. Action Club is really the only service club for people with disabilities worldwide. And it's a time when people who often have been on the receiving end of services get to organize together, serve in positional leadership, and give back to their communities in a way that's customized to the need and the way that they see fit. It's really meaningful and special. And it's that spirit I want to capture and the lessons I've learned working with Action Club that I'd like to bring to the office of Lieutenant Governor. You know, everybody, I think, is a little bit better off, a little bit wiser after they perform service for others. And realizing that people with all kinds of challenges in life also can be real contributors to helping their fellow Hoosier is important. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of frankly, dire issues facing Indiana. And I think every citizen should be active and engaged helping our neighbors. And that might be through formal ways, through your career. It might be through your philanthropic activity. It might just be as, you know, a sister, a mom, a neighbor. It could be a number of ways, but being organized and intentional and using that office to first convene people on these issues where we can make meaningful change and bring meaningful opportunities with disabilities of all kinds to do good in their communities.
And Christina, Kim was talking about one of the issues, and it's the unemployment rate for people with disabilities. It was interesting to me that that rate is nearly 80%, although many people want a job and can work. So how do you create opportunities so that people with disabilities have that access to job training, careers, independence, that whole thing?
Michelle, great question. You know, disabilities are as varied as people are. So there has to be an element of customization for individuals. But that said, I look at numbers. I've been working with Ball State, and they do such a good job of tracking how we're performing as a state as it relates to people with disabilities. And recently, I encountered a really shocking number that I think it's more than 80% of people with bachelor's degrees and disabilities are employed. And of that small 20%, most of those people are employed in social services, even though they might be more interested in working in science, technology, I mean, you name it, any number of fields. And I think partly that's because people tend to work where they build relationships. And we have to do a better job of helping people network and build those relationships. And also, we have to do a better job of helping employers understand that people with disabilities can be the very best employees you will ever find in the world. When it comes to work ethic, loyalty, what some people call soft skills, but I call critical skills, that it does, there's nothing to be feared or we have to deal with this kind of stigma, I think, because of unfamiliarity. So helping people become familiar and grow that appreciation is key. I actually co-authored a bill with Representative Ed Clear called the Earn Indiana Plan, and that was to help use state work-study funds for people who qualify, for private entities, private businesses to hire them and pay them minimum wage up to 40 hours a week if they were pre-qualified by the Commission for Higher Education. Mm-hmm. I've tried a number of years, and I'm resilient and will continue to try to extend that to people with disabilities of any kind and all kinds, because I think when I believe in internships for everybody for a number of reasons, but that helps train and educate the employer, and it helps train and educate the worker and build those critical relationships and help people learn how to work together in a way that benefits everybody. So that's one way, certainly through internships, but there are a number of ways. We also have to be looking at how we're working in high schools and creating different pathways to success and what I would call the Hoosier or Indy American Dream 2.0. Let's reboot that. I think for far too long we've imagined that to be successful it means you work in a cube or an office and you have this traditional 9-to-5 job where you work at a computer maybe, or and that's not necessarily success at all. I think, quite frankly, Michelle, your generation and younger kind of gets that, and you're pushing we older people a little bit to understand that, but we have to catch up. We have to also partner with our high schools to foster those alternative pathways to success too, because there are a whole lot of different careers out there. For example, don't ever ask me to fix an engine. Can't do it. Brain doesn't work that way. Not going to happen. Don't ask me to design a bridge for you. I mean, we'd be all be in big trouble. So finding that sweet spot for people where they can thrive on the job, whatever that job happens to be, is something that we must foster. People want to be employed. People want to work. People want to be contributing to society. So shame on us if we can't do a better job.
How about the shortage of DSPs? Direct support professionals to provide care for people with disabilities. Indiana's current Medicaid reimbursement rates for most services provided to people with disabilities were recently restored to the rates in 2010. They had been cut significantly over the last 10 years. So what do you do about that?
We're looking at that. I mean, we want to help keep people at home when they can stay at home. People are looking for career opportunities outside of that field now because it just doesn't pay them to do that kind of work, and we need these kinds of workers. There are all kinds of challenges. You know, when you don't have a stable workforce, for example, and somebody is being cared for, there are all kinds of practical and awkward things that happen. I mean, who wants to be bathed by a different person every day? Mm-hmm. Nobody. You know, those relationships are key to getting along in life for so many people in so many ways. And we have to ensure that, you know, we are keeping people at home. We're incenting people to work in these kinds of careers where they can build a career around this. And I think it's a really fixable, solvable thing. We have a lot of challenges out there, and this one seems like pretty low-hanging fruit to me.
Well, let's talk about guardianship of people with disabilities. If their parents rush in sometimes to make decisions because maybe they're not capable of making decisions on their own, how do you get them support so that they can make those decisions and support themselves and become independent?
You know, that's such a relatable problem because I think every one of us, you know, sometimes is at odds with our very own parents, and your relationship with your parent changes over time. Sometimes you age up into becoming the adult in that relationship. We certainly have to make sure that our court system, our judges, and everyone has good background on this. We've seen some success in the juvenile population, more than some success, with CASA volunteers, court-appointed special advocates. There are ways to work around this in a way that brings some wisdom and compassion for all parties, because when you have these kinds of tensions within families, it's really hard. But we also have to recognize people's autonomy and independence and their rights to live as adults in ways that they need to. So it's a delicate problem, but I think addressing every angle from the point of view of each actor in that play is important.
And Kim, it's interesting to me because since I've worked here, you have a presence within the State House. So you are seeing these issues. Is there a shift in making, especially guardianship decisions? How do legislatures and people view those things now?
Yeah, I think there definitely is a shift. I think more people with disabilities are becoming very proactive in speaking out that they do not want, nor do they need, full guardianship. That they need other alternatives to full guardianship because they are still capable and want to make some very important decisions for their own lives. I think we need to create opportunities and other alternatives to guardianship that helps them get some support and some critical decision making. Mm-hmm. If they have some questions around contracts or something like that, that there's somebody there to help guide them through that process, but not telling them yes or no that they can't enter into a contract. And so I think legislators have been very open to those type of conversations. I think we have done a nice job of creating relationships with legislators so that they want to create as much opportunity for people to become as independent as possible. And I think they have heard that loud and clear, not only from the ARC of Indiana, but Self-Advocates of Indiana, which is quite honestly the most important voice that they need to hear from.
Now we're talking about crisis intervention. When people are in the crisis situation, what do you do to provide services for people with disabilities that are in these situations?
You know, when several years ago we had a statewide commission on autism, for example, and I served on that commission and learned something very important. On the agenda that day, we were to discuss the situation of people with autism in our state prison system. And, it was like ships in the night. We had a number of questions for the Department of Corrections officials about how people in prison with autism were receiving services. I mean, these are people that hopefully are going to transition back to good citizenship and, back to our communities. And it's important that people are receiving services so that they can make that transition. And also, it's what we owe people, just at a very human level. Well, the response we got was, oh, don't worry about them. They're our best inmates. you know, they like to, they like the routine of prison. They don't interact or cause trouble. It's, you know, they get along really well. And we continued to question. I remember Senator Jean Breaux asking a number of very good probing questions that day, saying, well, no, you don't understand. We're not asking how they get along. We're asking how do they receive services for their disability. And it just, the conversation was not connecting and they could not answer, I think, because they didn't understand what their fundamental role was. And I, what I learned that day was that we have an absolute communication breakdown. And we see this, I see this kind of breakdown too in, for example, young people. I do a lot of work to protect children from sexual violence. So oftentimes young people are trafficked for commercial sex around our state. And when they encounter law enforcement treats them as criminals rather than as victims. So they treat people under the age of 18, for example, as prostitutes rather than victims who have been trafficked. That's also the same kind of communication problem. It's a training problem. People in roles where they interact with other people in crisis have to have a better, broader, richer understanding of how to interact and how to handle these situations. And that can be any number of things, including language, disability, just all kinds of things. And I believe that we are failing in a number of these regards. And we have to double down and ensure that all of our people working in, you know, you mentioned it, you know, in emergency rooms, on the street, you know, whether it's a police officer, whether it's a dispatcher, whether it's even a counselor in a school setting, people need to know and understand how to deal with and react. You know, I also think of just our young people with disabilities, perhaps developmental disabilities that are at a public high school. We have a lot of zero tolerance policies for certain behaviors. Well, that might not be appropriate if somebody doesn't have the understanding that you can't have zero tolerance for bad behavior that might not be understood or that might not be just handled with empathy and with full understanding of what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about your goals then as Lieutenant Governor.
Well, the Lieutenant Governor has a number of constitutional responsibilities, everything from Secretary of Agriculture to responsibility for rural and community development. That said, I think the Lieutenant Governor's office also has the power to convene, and there are so many pressing issues facing our state. John Gregg and I have been publishing a number of policy papers on a number of topics that we find very, very important, and topics that really every citizen in our state needs to be thinking about. For example, water. Water will impact every living thing in Indiana. Many people say that's the economic development driver of the next 100 years. Next week, we're going to be issuing our policy position paper on public safety. That impacts every human being in Indiana today and tomorrow as well. Part of that certainly has to do with how we treat or often don't treat people with mental illness or drug addiction in Indiana. We are the leading producer of crystal meth. We have terrible, outrageous problem with opiate addiction. We have very few resources for the indigent and others to get over these addictions or to find treatment for their mental health condition. In fact, for most people in Indiana, their primary source of mental health care is from their sheriff's department when they get arrested in jail. In Marion County, when you walk away from jail, you only get 3 days worth of your medication. There's no ombudsman or anyone else to help follow through and get you to the doctor to keep your treatment going to become as healthy as you possibly can. That shouldn't be. We have to do a better job by people. There's so many urgent, important issues facing Indiana. We have a number of goals, but the goal number one is to get to work on practical solutions for people in Indiana and to dial off of channel ideology and dial off of channel high philosophy. We care about things John, Greg, and I, we care about the things that people will feel at their kitchen table and their checking account. We want to help people do a little bit better by their children. We want very practical things for people. And we're ready to roll up our sleeves and get to work.
You know what? I have enjoyed this time. Thank you so much for being here, both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michelle.
There you have it. Christina Hale shared her thoughts with our listeners as part of the ARC's efforts to educate voters about candidates for state office in the upcoming elections on November 8th. To learn more about voter registration and your right to vote, visit Indiana Disability Rights, www.in.gov/IDR. And to learn more about the ARC of Indiana, follow us at www.arcind.org. Thank you so much for listening today, everybody. Have a great day today. Bye-bye.